It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Rebirth of challenged communities is happening with the unlikely cultivation of urban farms and community gardens in neighborhoods that have seen better days. Social entrepreneurs with green thumbs are repurposing abandoned schools, vacant city lots, green belts, and yards to nourish body and soul in areas that have been written off as hopeless. Not surprisingly, growing, distributing, cooking, and enjoying food is at the center of these enterprises of community rebirth. And today I'm visiting one of those promising ventures in Oak Park on the south side of Sacramento, Yisrael Family Urban Farm. I talked to Judith in their office in a former schoolroom, but my conversation starts here with Kanok Yisrael in the bright sun at their farm and garden.
It's the Yisrael Family Urban Farm. That's the name of our farm. So this, you could look at this as like an extension site. We call all of our sites like the Gardens of Eden. So that's what we term what we're doing. We're kind of rebuilding the whole idea of an Edenic lifestyle where you're getting everything that you can from the ground and from nature and spending a lot of time outside and just getting reconnected to the time when, you know, we used to kind of live in that way. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Kanok, on the grounds we're on currently,
sure.
It used to be a school. And then how do you come to occupy it?
Well, what happened is that I saw that the school was closing, and I saw that there was a garden over here, and I just kept inquiring with the school district, saying, hey, I'd like to be able to go here. There was a group that was doing the school garden when it was a school, and so after the school shut down, they stopped doing what they were doing. So I kind of saw a little bit of things happen as far as, you know, grass was growing, and I was like, maybe they need some help. So then I went ahead and started talking to the school district, and then after barking up their door for about, you know, a year or so, they decided to go ahead and give us the opportunity to start to take care of the garden, become the stewards of this garden here, and get a classroom so that we could start to teach classes in the community.
You're south side of Sacramento.
Right. We're in the middle of a food desert here.
Oh, that's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah, so it's a food desert. This is what's called South Oak Park, Fruit Ridge Manor, specifically where we live. And, we're in the middle of a food desert. Like, why we're standing right now, you probably couldn't get any organically grown food within a mile or so or two. And in addition to that, most of the community in this neighborhood, there's convenience stores, liquor stores, fast food restaurants, littered. There's more of those than anything else. I could get you some fast food. I could probably get you some cigarettes, alcohol, faster than I can get you an orange.
Now, if you could go further, you could get, I'm sure there's Safeways and there's other supermarkets that are but they're not anywhere near this neighborhood.
They're not within walking distance in this neighborhood, not to go and get bags of groceries and be able to walk anywhere with them. Not at all.
Yeah. So now we've situated where you are exactly, and you've gotten here. Now explain it again. Where did you get the notion to be here in the first place?
It all started once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away.
What is that?
The way that I got into this work, I got into this work kind of in a negative way. Both my parents had cancer. When I was younger, my dad had his kidney removed. My mom's a four-time breast cancer survivor. So in seeing them go through the things that they did and my doctor telling me basically that you're probably going to have some form of cancer because, you know, your parents have had it, genetics, that type of thing. That's kind of what you get from the doctors nowadays. And I just wasn't happy with that prognosis. And in the midst of seeing that, sometime around 90, 95, 96, I had a friend who had multiple sclerosis. When I say multiple sclerosis, I mean advanced form, glasses, wheelchair, barely talk, couldn't walk, you know, all that type of stuff. And I saw him get off of the medicine. I saw him start to take herbs and start to adopt a plant-based diet. And he is just like you and I. And that happened to him within 18 months.
Wow. So you're a believer in the regimen of eating organic foods and eating healthy foods.
The plant-based diet, eating plant-based, eating, you know, cutting down your consumption of meat or even cutting it out completely. Yes, I'm a believer of that. And I have proof.
Now, I've seen somewhere else, I think maybe on your website, mm-hmm. that you also used to commute to work all day long at
sure.
a computer.
Sure, absolutely.
And had second thoughts about all the time you were spending commuting that you might be able to be doing something else. And
absolutely.
That contributed to your path, apparently.
Well, absolutely, because, you know, it was around 2007, 2008, economy crashed, that I was sitting in my cubicle. And I was like, man, because, you know, the whole idea, there's a lot of fear mongering going on. The economy's going to crash. We're going back to the Stone Ages. There's not going to be any food. There's not going to be any of this. And so I just proposed to myself a question. Okay, what if it was a situation there was no food and we couldn't get it from the grocery store? How would I eat? And sitting there, not being able to have the answer, and then being, you know, breadwinner in a household, head of the household, and as a man wanting to be able to provide for my family, I was like, you know what, I need to do something about this. And so I decided I was just going to go in my backyard and start growing some food. Started on about 35 square feet. You know, I bought, you know, spent about $200 or $300 buying a bunch of tools and compost and plants and putting it all together, and everything looked good, and in 2 weeks it was all dead. Because you don't start a garden in the middle of July.
Right.
But any fool knows that. But if you're not connected to nature, I've been working for the last 10 years at that point, or 8 years probably at that point, inside in an artificial environment. So it gets too hot, you turn the air on. It gets too cold, you turn the heat on. So you're not connected to the natural cycles of knowing when to do things, because nature gives us those answers. So anyways, after that, I decided that I failed, but I was like, okay, I need to get closer to nature, and I need to learn how to grow food too. So I went up to Northern California and took a class from a guy named John Jevons, he wrote a book in the 80s called How to Grow More Vegetables. And basically, His idea is called biointensive growing, and so that was my gateway to organic growing, understanding that you need to feed the soil instead of feeding the plant. You know, those types of things, really worth focusing on the soil. And with that, I came back to Sacramento and I started growing food in the backyard. We went from 5% of our food to 10% of our food to 20% of our food to 40% of our food. And this was in about 4 years of time. And so then I was at the point, okay, well, I'm in the backyard, I got all this food, we're growing, we're having a great time, but this larger community, we're still in a food desert. And I was still working at this point. And so when I used to work in Rockland, so that means I used to get up in the morning, 6 o'clock, garden for an hour or two, then drive 30 miles, sit in a cubicle, come home, make dinner for the children, get all that stuff situated, and then go back out to garden. It had become a passion of mine. And so I was like, I think we can really help change people's lives through this gardening thing. Because in my family, we started eating outside. We started eating together more. We started working more as a family. All these types of things that happen inside of families. And we weren't doing the thing of, you know, I guess nowadays with the TV, how families sit down and watch other families be families on TV.
Wow. Yeah, I want to back you up just a little bit more, because there was a point where you got yourself prepared that you could do this other job. So there was a time where you decided you either had to achieve certain training or get on a certain track before you came to the conclusion that it wasn't all as cracked up to be, maybe.
Right.
But then tell me about that part. I mean, where did you start to find yourself into that other job where you were working a computer all day? What was that part of the journey?
Well, it was basically because, well, first of all, I didn't go to college. I took a high school proficiency exam at age 16. I went to college. I've never been the type to sit down and listen to somebody tell me something. That's not my idea of learning. I'm a hands-on, kinesthetic type of learner. Mm-hmm. After getting in a lot of trouble all throughout school because I didn't want to sit down and sit still, I went to college for 2 years. It was cool. But at 18 years old, I was like, I can't see going $50,000, $60,000 in debt only to have training. In many cases, I had a lot of friends who had went to college, and they weren't even working in the field that they got their degree in. And so I was like, I don't know if that's what I wanted to do. So I said, you know what, I need to find something else to do. I've always been a tinkerer, so I like to take things apart, put them back together. My dad bought me a 386 SX computer way back when they were like $1,500. Mm-hmm. So this was in the 80s, dialing to BBS systems. I learned how to take the computer apart, put it back together. And I got this call in 2000 saying, hey, would you like to work at tech support for a new product that's coming out? And I said, sure, why not? That was my gateway into the IT field. And it was being the tech support for the first phones that ever got on the internet. Wow. Way back when. Yeah. So it was from that's where I got it. That was my way into the IT field. And then from there, I took other things. I started doing some programming and all that stuff. But I'm all self-taught.
Yeah, well, that's great. And then we're back, flash ahead to now again. And
right.
You've come to this conclusion where you decided that you'd start growing more and more food for yourself.
Right.
You've concluded that it's important for you, that you've got health issues in the family.
Right.
You didn't
right.
want to do that. You find it more and more satisfying to
Definitely.
Grow for your family.
Right.
And then it got bigger. I mean, you got to this point. You still hadn't quit your job, but
nope.
you were explaining earlier.
Nope.
So how did that happen? Did you say, that's enough, we can make it?
Well, so it was right around 2011 where we actually made the idea that we were going to take what we're doing in our backyard and bring it to the larger community. And that's when the Yisrael Family Urban Farm was started. And so from that point in 2011, I realized that I just didn't want to do the other part of it. And at that time, Judith, who's now my wife, she was working still. And so I left first and I started just building and taking my whole entire half acre that we had and just really started just building and doing that. And then soon after that, started growing food, started getting involved in the food movement in Sacramento and all that. And then after that, we saved some money. And after that, she left too. And we decided that we were going to, basically, we just jumped off the building and built the parachute on the way down. That's what it did.
And had to look back.
Haven't looked back.
And so today, now this next stage we're
sure.
talking about, you've expanded it beyond. Now you've jumped ahead. How do you support yourself? You know, once you didn't have those paychecks coming
sure.
in, what replaced them?
Paychecks, more paychecks.
Okay.
But the thing is that it's one of those things of when you work a job, you have this idea of exclusivity. You only do one thing all the time. But when you're a business owner or you're self-employed, it's called multiple streams of income. So if it's not teaching a class, it's not selling some produce, it's not selling some eggs, it's not, you know, building a garden. There's all kinds of things that we do. So there's not just one thing that we do that supports us. We're really about we're involved in the food work. Anything that has to do with food and bringing people together around food, because we've seen the changes in people that you can't quantify necessarily on a grant report or a grant deliverable. We've seen people come to a class, eat one meal, and then change to vegetarians. Or we've seen people come to one meal and then, you know, start changing their eating habits and then lose 30 pounds, 40 pounds. You know, we've seen these things happen. So we can see that the work is there. And so when you start talking about the triple bottom line, which is people, planet, and profit, this is the best work to achieve something like that.
So Judith, in this whole enterprise of the Yisrael Family Farms, what do you do? What is it that keeps you busy in this whole exercise?
Oh, my goodness. It'd probably be an easier question to tell you what I don't do.
That's all right.
Probably less time. Well, there's many things that we do. I mean, we wear many hats. We're a small organization. So anyone who's done this type of work and has which is a big job, knows what it's like to work in with minimal resources. So not only am I the administrative assistant and sometimes the nurse and the doctor, I also teach classes. I have a love for herbal medicine and to be able to teach people and bring them back into remembrance on how to use plants to help manage their body, their mind, their spirit. That's what I love to do. I also teach cooking classes. So while my husband, he's the urban farmer, he primarily grows the food. Once the food's grown, people have to know what to do with it. And so what I do is I do cooking classes locally at local libraries or our local community center. We've done classes from seniors, classes that gear towards teens and family night classes. And it's a lot of fun. We teach people how to get that beet or that kale out of their backyard and onto the table and make it palatable for the whole family.
So what would be an example of something that you might get from your community garden or from, you mm-hmm. know, from your farms here in Sacramento?
What's an example of a menu that you would, or a recipe that you would have people put together and say, okay, here's a way that you can use these particular products, these vegetables perhaps?
Yeah, I think the simplest thing, again, because of my love for herbs, is a simple salad dressing. It is so easy to do. And you can take herbs from your garden. Herbs are really easy to grow, and be able to make a simple herbal vinaigrette and have it ready in minutes. So that's one thing that I really enjoy teaching. Another one of my favorite recipes would probably be just a curry. You know, with a curry, you can make curries all year and just put in your seasonal vegetables. If it's spring, you've got your bounty of asparagus, and you can go right into summer with your tomatoes and your squash. So a curry is also a great recipe.
Now, is it mostly the people that are involved in your classes, or are they mostly in this neighborhood?
So our classes, primarily it benefits the people in our community. However, we do have people from outside the community who come and take part of the classes and the education that we do. So everybody is welcome. But we definitely, our primary focus is to transform the hood for good. So we do cater and reach out to our immediate community.
So you are, again, you're occupying what was a school, and you've got mm-hmm. part of a school, and there are other nonprofits that are set up in this school too as well.
Yes.
That's mm-hmm. unique in itself, but it's good to be making good use of the buildings too.
Absolutely it is, you know, and it's really a great way for us to just be in touch with other work that other nonprofits are doing and what services are available to the community. Repurposing this space in the way that it has been, mm-hmm. the space meaning the school, has been great for the families and especially the youth that have been displaced when the school left. It did leave this emptiness, this void in the community. So now that this place has been repurposed, it's now become a community hub.
Do you have people that come and participate in gardens or help with the gardens or the farm? They just participate in growing things?
Well, the goals are many. You know, when you're gardening, there's so many different benefits. I mean, we would love for everyone to be able to have a space in their backyards where they're urban farmers and they're growing and they're putting a dent in their food bill. But the reality is, not everybody is going to do that. Not everybody has the space and is capable of doing that. There's some people who are in apartments who we've talked to about doing container gardening. And some people come out and put their hands in the soil just to be reacclimated to the earth, or if they're having a stressful day, or they just want to give back to the community. So there are a lot of different reasons why people come and take part in the work and work alongside of us. So some of it is because of the immediate need for food, and sometimes it could be a spiritual journey that somebody is taking.
So the people that take advantage of the various programs that you have between mm-hmm. the farm and the garden and the classes, mm-hmm. What's the age categories that tend to get involved? Do we go down to kids?
All the way down to young ones. We teach a class we teach a gardening for children class at one of the local libraries. And I think that class, though, that age group starts at like 18 months, 18 months old. So we have people who bring their babies and they sit them in the bed and give them a hand trowel, and they're playing with the soil and putting seeds in. So, and children naturally migrate to that. You know, I think Kanoka always says, this is why they call it kindergarten, right? Children naturally migrate to the natural world. And then we have our cooking classes that caters to seniors. So there's no group, our age group, that is excluded from our work.
I would imagine that all over the United States there are abandoned schools, there are empty lots, there are places where people could be growing food. Do you find that other areas of the country, or have they come to you and ask you how you've done it because they're wanting to do something similar where they are?
Absolutely. We get that question often from, we're here in California, we've had people from Florida and Georgia, we've had people in the Midwest, we've even have met people in Italy, you know, who are familiar with our work.
Well,
we can edit that part.
Italy's a long way. Well, I know. You know what? That's pretty surprising. Italy's a long ways. When I asked if people outside of the area, and that's
it
definitely
is.
Outside
it
is the
a
area.
Long way.
I might say we've got people in Italy that listen to this podcast. So
yeah.
perhaps there'll be somebody that knows you.
Yes, perhaps there will be.
I'm curious, this journey that the two of you have been on, that you both were in situations where you had other careers before, and now you're in the middle of this, making all these things come together. What gives you the most satisfaction?
Wow. You know, I would say the thing that gives me the most satisfaction is being able to see the delight and the face of a child when they are experiencing being able to harvest a cherry off the tree and just eat it, or to introduce them to a fig, you know, that is not a Fig Newton, or to see the adult that is just amazed that sunflower seeds actually come from sunflowers. So just to see that awe and that amazement and that wonderment of them looking at it, learning something new, and then also being able to taste or experience it, there is nothing that compares to that.
Have you had occasion where somebody said, boy, this happened at just the right time for me?
Say that again?
Well, I'm wondering that the timing, that some people going through rough times and trying to figure out how they should get a healthier perspective on life.
Sure.
And then they cross your path and they get engaged with the program and kind of grateful that they had a chance to be touched by the work that you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. We've had people do that, and we've had people who have never met us who have started growing food in their backyards, and they share their stories with us, and they send their pictures. You know, there is an awakening that's happening right now with a lot of people. We still have a lot of work to do, but I think that, especially being in Sacramento, since the urban farm movement and even the farm to fork movement is really starting a lot of conversations and really waking up a lot of people's minds and their ideas to rethink the food that they're putting on their table every day.
You obviously are enthusiastic about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if you look ahead and you find reason to be optimistic about the next 5 years, I mean, what is going to capture that enthusiasm down the road? What do you feel the best about as you look ahead?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think looking ahead, it's about inspiring more families, inspiring more people, and to see the youth and the young people that are growing up now with this newfound sense of, you know, my food doesn't have to come from the grocery store, or their local Walmart, or wherever it is that they may shop from, but that I am empowered to be able to grow my own food and I know how to do it. I would love to see them in the next 5 years and see what they do with that as they move on to the next stage in their lives.
I have a feeling there's somebody listening to this podcast that's going to want to follow up, and they may be one of those that happen within this next 5 years. If they want to know more about your program, where do they find you?
Sure, yeah. So we have a website. You can visit our website at yisraelfamilyfarm.net. We're also on Facebook. And we're on Instagram. So we have we're out there in social media, so you can find us.
Well, Judith, I really appreciate what you're doing. And thank you and Canoak for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.